everyone, and welcome to Linux to the Rest of Us, episode 115. It's a show about Linux. We cover everything from Linux, a little bit of Linux news, hardware, software, basically anything in the Linux or open source community that we deem worthy to bring to the show or interested in. We bring it to you as well. My name is Cody Cooper. I'm one of the co-hosts, aka Super Coop. But I'm just part of the small equation. The larger part of the equation is the Maven, aka Door-to-Door Geek, aka Steve McLaughlin. How's it going, Door?
Hey, hey. Good. Crazy. Little antsy. Kid getting in trouble. But they still love waffles. They're still my boys. And one of them has a Star Wars advent calendar. So all in all, things are good.
Oh, man. Dude, I saw someone posted on Google Plus, but an advent calendar, it was bottles of wine for every day of the month.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And my wife said, I'm making you one of those next year, but it's going to be beer. And then I promptly hugged her and cried.
Exactly.
So I thought, you know what I'm all about, baby.
Right. Yeah. Now, just don't forget, like Mary on Sunday morning Linux review, you will always have admin access to that box because you can always open up the side of it or the back of it and take a peek.
There you go. That's right. If not, I'll find a way in. No. I'll find a way in.
Exactly.
Pretty cool. Well, I'm glad to hear it's been mostly good for you. It's been mostly good for me as well. I saw an awesome, awesome movie called Indie Game, the movie. It's about these two independent game developer teams that games. And man, I'm already a big fan of one of the games, but I watched the movie and then I bought the other game. And I've just been playing. One of the games is called Super Meat Boy, which was in a recent Humble Bundle. And I played it like for 4 or 5 hours today. And it's just one of those classic like 8 or 16-bit games that as a kid you get so frustrated that you just want to throw the controller down because it's so hard.
Right.
So my day was already good doing that. And then I decided that I'm going to order one of the Chromebooks, which we'll get into here in a bit. So then the day got better. And then I went to the store to get some beer. And then they had this beer that was discontinued a few years ago that they brought back. So it was just like good on top of good on top of good. So I'm promptly ready for it to just go right out the door. Hopefully sometime after the show, but it's got to come down because it's just been going up all day.
Gotcha. Well, let's not like anticipate when it's going to happen. Let's just roll with it.
There you go.
And I say not completely family friendly. Venstone Linux Game Cast. They did talk about that movie. He said it was good, but everybody he thinks was a little bit too much of a crybaby for the camera, but he said it was interesting insight, I believe was his verbiage he used.
Yeah.
And I didn't get a chance to see it.
It is good. Just with any of these sort of, you know, reality shows / documentaries, you got to assume that the producers are poking and prodding or asking certain questions to get reactions. But if you're just a fan of video games in general, or you were when you were a kid back in the 80s, or just played some of the classic games, it's a touching story. It's great. So check it out. I'd highly, highly endorse it.
That is cool. Real quick, I'll say this is the time of year. Don't forget podnuts.com/Amazon. Support those who support you and at no extra cost.
Definitely. Don't even think of Amazon.com. If you're going to go do any shopping online this year, and this is what I did in Chrome, I just went to podnuts.com/Amazon and then made a little hyperlink, which I then put right beneath my address bar. So I don't actually have to type in the URL anymore. I just click on the little A, the little Amazon link, because it's directly to Amazon. It's just through Podnuts so that Steve gets a commission, the network gets a commission. So if you're doing any shopping, definitely hit that up. If you have any questions on how to make that link, hit me up on Google Plus and we'll let you know. But it does help us out, especially in the holiday season. So thank you.
Yeah, it's the Odyssey. That's really smart.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're going to jump into the basic here, and we've kind of got what's the word? Reoccurring thing. I can't remember what it's called. But it's going to be patience, and there's a bit of a swerve in this patience, I will be very honest. Okay. Like the last year and a half, maybe 2 years, we in the Linux world have been teased that we are going to get a genuine Linux tablet. We've had a couple reputable people stand up and say, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. And something happens, like the vendor changes hardware on them, or they decide, we're going to go Android, but if you want to hack Linux on it, you can. And so it's still not Linux on a tablet. I'm now getting like reachy. I just want to find somebody in the real world selling a real tablet by default that comes with Linux on it, not an Arcos tablet that you can put Linux on it, and not something heavily, insanely neutered Linux like the old netbook kind of stuff.
Right.
And Red Dwarf, good friend, sent me this link. Now, I will say, in blue letters by the top, it says, click here for pre-orders.
Ooh.
Not to buy it now. So it's another promise, but pre-orders. Now, I'll say this. Here's why I believe this one's going to come to fruition. I look at the hardware. I look at the PengPod, P-E-N-G-P-O-D, sorry. PengPod 700, 7-inch tablet. The CPU is an A10. That's almost a common structured ARM processor. It isn't super fast. It isn't super slow. It's just an A10. 7-inch screen, 800 by 480. Those are not crazy specifications. They're not insane. They're not Nexus 7 resolution. 1 gigabyte of RAM, respectable, not crazy. 8 gigabytes of internal space, not crazy, respectable. Of course, I would love more. SD card up to 32 gigabyte, respectable, not crazy. 1 USB port, USB OTG, Ethernet external, 3G external, Bluetooth external, which I don't know what they mean by external, but they say external.
Yeah,
I know.
Weird.
So here's what I'm trying to say to people. This is not a barn burner device. This isn't something that's going to set the world ablaze and change the world forever. But instead, it's a down to earth, modest Linux tablet. And I'll say, hackers want something they don't have to spend a lot of money on. And to be honest, with Linux, you can basically take GNOME 2 type interface and customize it down to where it's not heavy. So that's why I'm believing this is much more possible than some of the other people who were coming out saying they were making a 7-inch or a Linux tablet. And they're going to have a 7 and a 10-inch model. Oh, and here's the other reason why I think it has credibility. They are going to have what's called a Peng stick, P-E-N-G-S-T-I-C-K. And if you take a look at it, you'll notice it looks exactly like a MK802 form factor.
Yep, it's like the exact same case. I saw that and I was like, ooh.
Yeah, so they're not doing anything, again, revolutionary. They're piggybacking on what other people are doing and just bringing it out to the masses. And I'm okay with that. So, you know, if it was already out, it might be on my Christmas wish list, but it's not.
But Dor, how many simoleons, how many D'Amicos am I going to have to shell out to get one of these things?
Okay, I didn't look completely at the at the price, and wow, I'll say I like it. Mm-hmm. For the 7-inch, it's $110.
Yeah.
And I've had people ask me about tablets, and I'll say, right now, by far, bang for the buck, nothing beats the Nexus 7. You know, the performance, the build quality, and your experience for that much money, it can't be met. If the Linux tablet runs modest, okay, $110, I think, is almost a fair price.
Yes. Yeah. And one quick note, too. I'm reading the description under the 700, which is a 7-inch tablet. It will run Linux from the SD card, not from the internal storage.
Gotcha.
But if it can still boot into it instead of doing like a trurooted install, I mean, if it's booting to like an image from an SD card, that should still count. It's still progress. It's still something better than what most devices offer today. So,
yeah, and I'll say, like, they didn't mention the megahertz of the processor. They don't go into insane details about the specs. If it can run from the SD slot, then what it basically then is dependent on the speed of the SD slot.
Yep.
If it's a fast SD slot, the experience will be very acceptable. If it's a slow SD slot, people might get upset.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but when you say speed of the SD slot, you mean speed of the SD card?
Well, the slot too. The slot has a maximum speed throughput. And it's almost never discussed what that speed is. They typically just talk about maximum capacity.
Okay, got it.
But I've seen SD slots that will not go as fast as a class 10.
Right.
You know, so.
But with as cheap as most cards are nowadays, it's not costing you that much to go up to a class 10 card. Mm-hmm. So it's like, why not just get that anyway, just in case? Because, I mean, most of the standards now, luckily most of the standards I've seen, like at the SanDisks and like the Kingstons out there, they're at least class 4. But, you know, the standard used to be class 2, but with more of these high-end cameras coming on the market, they're starting to offer, you know, 4 is the standard, and then 10 pretty much everywhere. Like, you can walk into a store and get a 10, whereas you had to get them online before, unless you're going to, like, a specialized shop for it. So, spend the money, get the 10, because with all these other devices coming out that you may buy in the next 2 or 3, 4 or 5 years, it's worth sort of spending a little bit extra to future-proof yourself and have that device which you can carry over into multiple areas that you might use it. So that's what I would suggest.
I learned that the hard way. Mm. Very good. And yeah, and the prices in the last year have plummeted.
Yeah. You know,
very cool. Now,
I'm looking forward to this.
I'm looking forward to hearing people talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
If I actually have the disposable income when they launch, I might jump on it. I won't lie. Just because I want a Lenox tablet. And I'm, you know, if it means a thick, heavy tablet, I still have a Lenox tablet. You know,
right.
I'll be happy.
And at that price, I mean, set aside $5 or $10 a week, just like I say for everything else, and you'll have the money sooner than later. So, if you really think you want it.
Very cool. Okay, now next you want to talk about Chromebooks.
Yes. So.
Yeah, I was going to say... Okay, for everybody screaming, it isn't Linux, shut up, because it is. And it always comes back to Linux on this show. So show a little patience. Like, I brought that one back quick.
Right. He tamed the fires.
Yeah.
With mentioning of the Chrome Ubuntu spin, and now over the past couple of weeks, Fedora has been ported onto it. Someone has OpenSUSE running on the Chromebook, and kind of like what the tablet we were just talking about, it's all loaded through the SD card. However, this really is very, very, very interesting, and it's really akin to kind of what I'm trying to do at home now, where I have all these old computers, and I could use them to throw Linux on and use them, you know, as NAS servers or just as little multi-purpose machines. But it's, some of you guys might have done this too. If you have that old P3 or P4 sitting around, or like with me, I have this old iMac G5. I threw a Ubuntu on it, and then I got the sucker up and running, and it is loud, and it is hot, and I'm sure it's eating up a lot of power. But I mean, the thing is, just like, I couldn't run it during a podcast because it's just so loud. The amount of power it's taking to run some of these older machines in mass, it might not be worth it nowadays. I mean, it's nice that we have the option to do that, but if you're going to be investing in newer hardware, obviously we want to keep it on the cheap, unless we're buying like a whole new big rig or whatever. But these Chromebooks by themselves, like if I could only run the Chrome OS on it, it's not that desirable to me. But the two lower end offerings from Acer and Samsung are really, really cool. And I adore, in fact, do you want to tell them which one that you might be getting in the near future? Wink, wink.
Well, I don't see. I never know. I never know if my wife's actually being honest and sincere or she's just messing with me.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. But I asked, I said, look, this was when the Mega Millions was still Powerball for $550 billion with a B dollars.
What?
And I said, yeah, the Powerball.
$550 billion?
I thought.
No, it couldn't be billion.
Was it? Whatever. More money than
anyway, ridiculous amount of money. Yeah. When that was still actively to be sought after with tickets, yes.
Right. And I said to her, I said, look, the first stupid thing I'm going to buy the very first day if we win is this. And I sent her a link to the Chromebook. Because once in a while, you got to shoot modestly. But then I said, in the email to her, you know, hard return, ... Or if your mother, your father, my father, your sister, your cousin, and my sister would pull their money together, you could buy me this. And it was a link to the Acer C7 Chromebook for $199. Mm-hmm. And my wife just replied, done. Now, I don't know if she meant done, I'm going to kill you, or done, you're going to get it.
Right.
And I was afraid to ask for any more detail.
Well, we're keeping our fingers crossed. Yeah, so Dor told me he was potentially going to go with this model, and then I started to do some research myself. And immediately, I wanted to go with the Samsung model, which is $249, whereas this Acer is $199.
Well, and that one came down in price, didn't it? Because like a week ago, that was $299, I think.
Yeah, I think the initial price on them were $299 for the Wi-Fi model, and then $379 for the 3G Wi-Fi, and they went down to $249 and $329, if I'm not mistaken. I know that's their current prices. But the thing is, the Samsung model, you can't find it anywhere. I mean, anywhere. They had one at my local Best Buy, and I went to buy it on their website, and then it kept logging me out of my account over and over and over and over again. So, not shopping at Best Buy anymore. Thanks, Best Buy. Or you're welcome, I should say, because you're not getting my money anymore. But the Acer ones, you can find them in pockets online right now. And the main differences to me, and feel free to investigate this yourself, but the Acer model, while cheaper, it runs half the battery, supposed battery life of like 3.2 hours versus the Samsung with 6.5. And I thought, if I'm going to buy like something kind of tiny to carry around with me, I'd rather have a longer battery life, but I'm really near power anywhere I go anyway, which is kind of what Dor's argument was. Am I right, Dor?
Yeah, I don't want to carry around anything heavy, and I'm never far from a battery outlet.
Right.
So I don't care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The one enticing thing about the Samsung model is that it actually has a USB 3 port.
Yeah.
Which I thought was cool. And because I have some USB 3 devices, just the fact I'd be able to hook up like a USB 3 drive and just slam some data on there really quick would be kind of cool. But
well, yeah, and to be honest, you could, because of the speed of USB 3.0, if you had hypothetically a 32 gig thumb drive,
mm-hmm.
you could tape it to the lid of the computer, plug it in 3.0, and it's fast enough to be just like a hard drive, an internal hard drive.
Yep. Or if I get
that's
it
a
to
huge
boot,
plus.
If I get to get it to boot from USB 3 and then do like live environments, that would be awesome.
True.
Yep. The Acer Hour does not have USB 3. Okay. So, but the Acer has an actual Intel processor. The Samsung runs on a Samsung created ARM processor. And the Acer has a 320 gig 5400 RPM drive, whereas the Samsung has a 16 gig SSD. So the SSD and then the ARM processor account for the longer battery life, one would assume, mm-hmm. just because of the lower power consumption. But for my money, I'm going to pick the Acer. I'm going to order the Acer soon, because you can still get them. The Samsung, I mean, it's sold out everywhere. Google doesn't have them. You can't get them at podness.com/Amazon, Staples, Best Buy, nothing. So if Dor gets one for Christmas, or if he hits the jackpot, we're never going to hear from him again. I'm going to have to take over the show.
You would not stop hearing from me, because then I'd do like 15 podcasts a week.
I know. And we'd all move to Florida. We'd have a podcast like High Rise or whatever. No, I don't want to move to Florida either.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll import Steve somewhere in the Midwest. We'll meet halfway.
At least for 3 months out of the year.
There you go. But I want to hear you guys' thoughts. This is going to be kind of my question for the week. If you guys have bought one of these Chromebooks, even one of the older models, but primarily one of the newer models, if you have bought one, let me know what you think about it. If you're thinking about buying one, please look at both models and throw us an email at podcast@linuxthestofus.com. Send us your questions, answers, thoughts on either one of the devices, because I'm committing to getting one of these just because I really want to hack on it. I mean, if I get the Acer, I can crack it open, potentially throw an SSD or a 7200 RPM drive in it. It might decrease battery life, but just as it stands right now, you can only throw already throw Linux on it. But in the coming months, we're going to see other distros sort of ported to it, hopefully, and it's just going to become that much more of a desirable device. So I can't wait to get my hands on one.
Yeah, and the only, okay, now the other thing that's the same that I didn't think would be the same, the screen resolution is identical. The size of the screen is identical. The size of the device is nearly identical. The weight of the devices, the Acer's 3 pounds and the Samsung's 2.4 pounds.
Yep.
So, I mean, they're very close in a lot of the big things, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And here's the other thing. The Acer has an HD webcam. The lower price one has an HD webcam. The more expensive one has a VGA webcam.
Right.
So there's weird things like that going on with it. And I'll say this. The only reason I went for the Acer was not because it was cheaper, but because it's more hackable, Linux friendly. And I think Google might have did that on purpose, had the cheaper one like that. Where the Samsung technically should be more Android hackable friendly because it's ARM.
Right.
But I'm not sure. You know, time will tell when the hackers get a hold of it, you know, all the different things they do. You can already put Ubuntu 12.04 on the Acer, which was another thing that made me feel good. That was actually a link from the Linux Basics forums where the guy showed me that. And that was like the last nail in the coffin. Now, with that said, even if I get one, I'm going to try to stick with the default Chrome OS for as long as possible. I might never put Linux on it, or pure GNU Linux, Ubuntu, or whatever on it.
Right. Well, and the nice thing about the Acer, too, is that I've looked at the full 360-degree view of it. So what I'm going to do, yes, of course, I'll try Chrome OS because I have yet to touch a device with it on it. But what's nice is I could literally take the hard drive out, slap another drive in there, and potentially try a native Linux install on that new drive. But even if you don't do that, the way that they're putting Ubuntu on this system right now is for booting it from the SD card. So you can literally dual boot. You're not going to ruin your native install of Chrome OS on the stock drive at all. But you're just going to get to go play, which is another huge benefit to running it that way. But yeah, I cannot wait to get this thing, crack it open, try all sorts of fun stuff. So if you like this, if you don't like this, if you have anything to say, please send us an email at podcast@linuxforrestofus.com, and we'll be covering this in the near future as well.
Very cool. Yeah, especially if we both get one.
Definitely. Now, what one thing, this is sort of leading us into our next topic, is that with the purchase of this, you also get, if I'm not mistaken, Dor, it's 2 years of 100 gigabytes of online storage space through Google Drive Online, correct?
Yep.
Now, obviously, you're thinking, well, okay, I get that, but if I'm not going to be using Chrome OS that much, how am I really going to utilize that space? Well, I found a link today because I've been trying to justify, get all these little questions tacked off on this list. Well, what if I want to do this? What if I want to do that? Well, one of the questions I had was, how can I utilize that free 100 gigs of storage over the 2 years without using that device? And I found an awesome link, which is how to use Google Drive on Linux. Two unofficial solutions. So these are unofficial solutions as of right now, but these are apps and things you can do in the command line to access your Google Drive storage, especially your free Google Drive storage, if you get one of these Chromebooks through any other Linux system that you have.
Yeah, and the one called InSync, InSync, the screenshots make the folders as you're looking at them look a lot like Dropbox, where you're seeing the little icon showing that it's refreshing or downloading, and then check mark that it's already done downloading. That one is a very graphical friendly one. The next one's called G Drive. It's Grive. I'll say not as pretty as the other one, but I believe with that one, you actually can do syncs, like on-demand command line based syncs. So if you wanted to schedule this across your network, you would need Grive. I believe when it's just one desktop in your house, go with the InSync.
And I like to see that both of these sort of cater to both ends of the spectrum as far as I need a pretty GUI versus I just want a command line interface so that I can just simply do what I want to do and schedule it. Both of these are offered with both tools, which is nice kind of right off the bat. I'm sure more of these will pop up, and as they do, we'll report on them. Obviously, I have yet to use it because I haven't got my Chromebook yet, but when Dor and I get these devices, we'll definitely report back because, I mean, it's 100 gigs of cloud storage free for 2 years. I mean, who wouldn't love that aside from Captain Jonathan T. Nato? Who wouldn't love free cloud storage for 2 years?
Yeah. Well, and I'll say there is an NSYNC command line app. I don't know if it's as full featured as the Grive one, but choice is good. Bottom line, gotta love choice, you know?
Yep. Choice and options. Gotta have them.
Okay. Now I've gotten this message 3 times in the last couple weeks during the show. I get a message pop up that says you've been logged out for security reasons.
Of the Hangout?
No, the Hangout's still up and running. That's what I don't understand. But my Gmail, my Google Plus, and my Doc were like locked. I couldn't do anything with them.
Maybe it's because we were talking about doing something other than what was intended with the Chromebooks.
Hey.
It's not like they could be monitoring us or anything.
I don't care if they are. Eric Schmidt and all those guys, you know, come to my door. I'll be happy to kick you in the crotch
one more time. There we go.
Okay, now this one is like another link back. Now, I'm not going to lie. I have not installed anything on my Nexus 7 because I want it to be pure. I want it to be wholesome while I do these Android videos. Well, I kind of need it to be pure and wholesome.
Mm-hmm.
But this almost got me to do something different just for a day. And that is, you can install the Chromium OS, or like the Chrome OS, just like we were talking about on the Chromebooks. You can install it on your Nexus 7 device. And I think that might be a good experience because I can tell you the Chrome OS that I had on my original CR48. Was really trim, light, and snappy, which means it should fly like a lightning thing on the Nexus 7. I mean, it has to be super insane fast on the Nexus 7. So I really came close to toying with it, but I didn't. But it's out there, and it's developed by a guy, HEXXEH. Who is, in my opinion, the Chrome OS, Chromium OS guy. He's been doing this for every bit of 2 years. So if anybody's going to put out a solid Chrome OS or Chromium OS experience, it should be Hexa. Yeah, sure.
Like a Canadian Jonah Hex. Oh, that was a terrible joke.
I don't know Canadian and so I don't know. And there is a video over at hexxeh.net where he's showing it running, and to me it looks very respectable, very doable. And of course, he has a keyboard hooked up to it and a mouse.
Dude, I cannot wait to check this out. If we only knew someone with like a spare Nexus 7 that could potentially install this.
I don't know.
I have one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Dor knows this, but I basically bricked my second one, or I thought I did, because actually it'll be something we'll mention on the next show, but
I wasn't going to bring that up, man.
Well, you know what? These things happen. I'm not the maven. You're the maven.
Hey, I soft broke my stuff plenty of time.
Yeah. Anyway, it's up and running again. I'm going to report back on the Linux version of the Nexus toolkit. We'll do that next week. But anyway, I have a backup and running, and now I want to use that as kind of a test bed to throw Ubuntu on it. And now I definitely want to try this. So I'll do that soon and get back to you guys in the next couple weeks with that.
Very cool. Yeah, I haven't heard any updates on the Ubuntu one, but I know they were supposedly working on it, making it more stable, more solid.
Very awesome.
Okay, this next one, I got to say, I know I'm lying to myself, and that's okay, because I'm acknowledging that I'm lying to myself. I believe, thanks to Linux users, Steam has hit 6 million concurrent users. And it's only thanks to the Linux users. But something tells me that that really can't be, you know, true. Can it? You think?
Oh, of course it can. Of course it can. I mean, obviously they hit a milestone, okay? And you can't attribute that to anything else that that's happened in recent history with Steam other than Linux becoming, other than Steam becoming available on Linux. You just can't. There wasn't some big game launch. There was Call of Duty Modern Warfare or Black Ops 2, but true. I don't know. I mean, maybe, but as far as a growing platform, the majority of those players play on console. So you're not going to see a huge surge on Steam. Maybe not, but regardless, I would love to see the numbers. And I'm sure they'll release them, you know, after it goes live, saying, well, this is how many people contributed to the beta. Because we know how many people that they've doled the beta access out to as far as like official, but then there's no way that we as the public can gauge how many people did the backdoor thing to get in.
Exactly.
Which if they didn't want that, they would have closed it. And obviously, if they didn't close it, it was obviously doing something good for them. I don't know, like making them hit a milestone like this. So yeah, if I was a betting man, which I am, I would bet that Steam on Linux made this happen for sure.
Yeah, and it's going to make some people angry, but it wouldn't shock me if the percentage of Linux users the percentage of Linux installs globally who at least downloaded the Steam and ran it once to see if they could get it to run was actually pretty high.
Oh,
just to see if they could get it to work. Maybe not create an account and try games or anything, but just to see if Steam could work. Something tells me it was kind of high. And that's the thing. Are they counting? Well, they said concurrent users. So that means people logged in at one time.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yep.
That's kind of mind blowing. I'm not going to lie.
Now it is that time of year where, you know, people are having free time due to, you know, like vacations and things like that. But yeah, man, it's gotta be that. But we'll keep our eye on it. And Red Dwarf sent us that link. Thanks, Bill. And if we hear any more on it, we'll definitely report back.
Absolutely. Here's just a super quickie that I encourage people, beg you, please, 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 please take this URL, stick it in your back pocket, put a pin in it, fold it over by your kid's picture or something. Keep this handy. Okay. I will say one of the most one of the world's most underutilized tools for Linux, in my opinion, is distrowatch.com. I said it. They have in their search, here's just a quick tangent, in their search, for instance, they have a distro search tool where you mm-hmm. can search via categories. What is the OS type? Is it BSD, Linux, Solaris? What's the category? Beginners, desktop, firewall, gaming, country of origin, Argentina, Brazil, US, based on Arch, Cent, Debian, Fedora, FreeBSD, not based on. So you can say, give me anything, but don't give me anything based off of
right.
Desktop in environment, all mm-hmm. no desktop, black box, Cinnamon, GNOME, IceWM, KDE, blah, 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 blah. Architecture. There's a lot more architectures than people think there is. I will say that. Besides just x86 and ARM, there's like 85 different architectures.
Mm-hmm.
Status, active, and dormant, and discontinued. So you can find a distribution based upon those criteria. I think that's friggin' genius.
And I gotta say, I used this myself. And yeah, I mean, think of it like if you ever search on eBay, right? If you're just, I mean, you could use general search and search by the item, but if you want to get more specific and find in certain categories or by zip code or area or shipping cost, like it's a very advanced search. There's all sorts of drop down menus you can do. And I used this recently twice. One, to find Linux distributions that I can install on a PowerPC on an old Macintosh. Okay. And then the other one I used, I just wanted to look at the top 20 or whatever running LXDE or excuse me XFCE. So you can do it by desktop environment, which comes stock, or all the other things that Dor said. So if you're really, if you haven't been to DistroWatch, first of all, go check it out. Awesome site. We know guys who operate the podcast through Byer Brown and what's the other guy? I forget. Bruce Patterson. Yeah, Bruce Patterson.
Bruce Pattern. But now they have Dude Man on it as well. Kevin right. Wisher, who all props to Kevin Wisher. Kevin, really, really smart guy. And now they have a lady who apparently has at least the hots for Byer Brown's voice.
Oh, who doesn't?
I know,
man.
You said it. I guess I'm not stable enough in my manhood to admit it, but I do agree with you.
All I'm saying is I'm gonna have some very specific literature for him to read in that at OLF next year that we're just gonna be recorded and leaked somewhere online.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, now here's the real reason I came to DistroWatch. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, I consider myself to be a Debian crutch bearer. By that, I mean, I really only feel comfortable when I'm in a Debian-based system. And I literally stopped and thought about it because I thought what it is about these systems that I like, and it's not the software selection. It's not the stability. It's not the ease of use because nothing's easy to use. You have to learn something all the time. Mm-hmm. And I narrowed it down to my comprehension and understanding of the apt-get or aptitude package management system. So then I said, there has to be a place out there where I can research all of the different package management interfaces, whether it's apt, URPMI, Zipper, Yum, Slapgit, all this kind of thing. And I found this page on DistroWatch called Package Management Cheat Sheet. Nobody else in the known universe I've seen took the time to put such a thing together, nor put together a distro search tool. Okay.
Right.
These two things alone in my book deem I donate to DistroWatch somehow.
Okay. That's fantastic. Yep.
Yeah, because they basically cover the package management systems for, I'm not going to mention them all, Debian, Ubuntu, OpenSUSE, Fedora, CentOS, Gaia, Slackware, Zenwalk, Pardis, Arch, Savion, Mandriva, on and 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 keep going and keep on keep going. Dude, this is like the master sheet. So I can now literally download virtually any distribution known to mankind and just install. And then when I want to install something, all I got to do is come here, look at this page and say, oh, okay. I just type Zipper install in the package name. And thanks to tab completion, which it's going to exist in 89%+ of these things, Zipper mm-hmm. install space MUMB hit tab mumble enter. I'm off to the races.
Yeah. And this is a great resource, especially I think that term you put it, what was it? Linux or I'm sorry, Debian based crutch bearer. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
No, perfect way of describing that, because honestly some of the more popular distros are all Debian based, right? Yeah. But you're really doing yourself a disservice unless you really sort of investigate. I mean, obviously, just like with anything else, you're gonna need that day-to-day system that you shouldn't touch just because you can't break it because you need it up and running, right? But if you
unless
can do
you dangerous
yeah unless you're door-to-door geek 10 minutes before show, what does this packet of random system do? Damn it. Yeah, but basically what I'm getting at is you're doing yourself a disservice if you don't try other distributions, which in turn may have other package management systems, which I will say, like the first time I installed Fedora, I was just like, wow, this looks cool. And then I got to dealing with RPMs, I was like, I'm gonna reinstall whatever else instead, just because it was so foreign and I literally couldn't do anything without a lot of research. And I'm sure there were easier ways to do it, but if I had something like this when I first encountered that fear would have gone away, because I could have studied it and gone, oh, okay, well, this is how I install these basic apps that I need and whatever else I need. I now have this knowledge to go get it.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
And here's my quick example. I installed Arch at one point in time. The Arch Wiki is maybe the most phenomenal plethora gathering bunch of documentation, but it's a little bit too much. And I couldn't even figure out all the package management stuff because it was kind of spread out and it was exhausting detail about it. I didn't need exhausting detail. I come here and I can easily see install new software from the repo Pacman-S package name. Because I kept having to run like Pacman-S lower U. I don't even know what the hell this is. The guy just keeps telling me to type it. Okay, I'm typing it. Right. I have no idea what it means. Where now, I just come here, I look, and I can see what all these commands are in simple form.
Easily digestible chunks.
Yeah, and I'm a simple kind of guy.
Yep. So, yeah, if you guys have been looking to maybe dip your toe into using, you know, a KDE-based system running off of RPM, or, man, I got to tell you, one of my best Linux experiences was the first time that I installed OpenSUSE. I think it was 11, maybe? Maybe it was 10 or 11, but I was having problems getting one of my printers to work on my Ubuntu-based system. Like, I just couldn't get it. It was a Canon printer, name brand printer, couldn't get it to work. Needed to print some documents for my tax guy. And I think Dora said, just try installing OpenSUSE. I did it on one of my boxes, and not only was it beautiful, I mean, the interface was great, but it automatically just, my printer just popped up, and I just printed the documents. But then I wasn't familiar with the package management system, so I immediately uninstalled it when I didn't need it for that specific thing anymore. Definitely want to go back, talk to some OpenSUSE guys at OLF, got a disk for the new version. The newer version's coming all the time. It's a great distro, but basically, I hate to reference this show, but the show lost. The show lost.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I think it was in the pilot or maybe the first two or three episodes, but Jack was talking about doing surgery on someone's back and he accidentally nicked the spinal column and all the little spinal membranes just leaked out. And he could do, and he basically kind of described it like all these noodles just shooting out of a bigger noodle. And in that moment, he basically decided to be scared for like 10 seconds and then just get down to business and fix it. Realized that, and Dore spoke about this in his talk. You're going to break it. That should be your first rule. Now, don't get completely terrified if you break it. Don't get completely terrified if something is foreign and you don't know what it is. Like I can honestly say either I was lazy or I was terrified, but I did not give those distros and those package management systems a solid shake or enough time to figure out how to use them.
Right.
Because I didn't want to be afraid. Let that fear, let that unknown wash over you for just a little bit and then realize, wait a minute, I have a Google. I have DistroWatch. I can figure this out. And then do yourself the service and just do it. And if you have any problems, hit us up. We'll help out. It's a huge community, and that's what makes this great, is the community that people can reach out to when you do have problems or questions.
Right. Very good stuff. We're going to skip this one real quick, Cody. Sorry.
No problem.
I think prices changed on us, so I don't want to quote something wrong. But we'll look at it.
No problem.
Okay, this one, man, I'm going to tell you right now, Cody, I was upset for such a long time because I had Sean Dirty Thumbs Johnson on Android App Addicts. I mean, constantly rubbing his dirty thumb stuff in my face about Splashtop running so fantastic for him. And there's a guy at work who just got a Nexus 7 two or three weeks ago. He's a Windows shop, so I told him about Splashtop. He comes in, lordy, 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 I can sit in my kitchen, I can make myself breakfast, and I can watch my boys over on the Arsenal play some soccer, football, he says.
Right.
And it's because Splashtop. And it's really difficult to me to really, I think, accurately describe Splashtop. But here's what I gather it is. You have your Windows computer running. You install Splashtop on it. You install your Android device. You have your Android device. You install Splashtop on it. And it makes streaming audio and video from your desktop to your tablet simpler and it actually works. We're like TeamViewer, LogMeIn, VNC, all these other things. If you can get audio to work, it's typically insanely out of sync. And it's a really bad experience.
Yeah, it can be laggy, that's for sure. I've experienced that.
And Sean, Dirty Thumbs, for damn near months kept telling me how it's so perfect, it's so smooth, it works so great. I'm at home, I'm over at my brother's house, I don't know, something, and I can log into the house and check out the webcam, and I can talk into the phone, and it speaks out of the computer, scares the heck out of the dog. Yeah, that's great, Sean. Shut up, I don't care. Well, now, Splashtop is finally available for Linux. So I'm, to be quite honest, giddy to try this, to experience this, and see what I've been missing now since April, maybe? I mean, it's really got annoying there for a while. But, and I'll say this, there's a link over at Lifehacker talking about it. And there's a video that gets really interesting right about 26 seconds into the video, where they show simultaneous connections. And what I believe it is, there's four desktops on Linux. Each Splashtop connected device is looking at a different desktop on that Linux system. So it's like, it's almost like you have four different computers running and four Android tablets connecting to four different computers, which are actually connecting to one. Kind of crazy. I'm going to
check this video out. This looks awesome.
Well, I'll say this is the perfect thing for a business traveler or someone who just wants to watch media from their computer someplace else besides their computer. You know what I mean? Because you can be out in the backyard grilling and have your Nexus 7 and you can be watching, you know, your favorite sports teams or Shark Tank or Jersey Shore, I don't know, something. Or you could literally be in Afghanistan. Pull out your Nexus 7, tether it to something, and watch content from your home computer.
Yep.
You know, it's kind of crazy.
Man, yeah, I cannot wait to try this.
Yeah.
There is a disclaimer, though, that watching video through Splashtop can potentially cause acid reflux. So, Sean, be careful. I don't want you getting a tummy ache.
That's probably why every time we start Android App Addicts, he's doing...
Yep.
This a lot, and I think it's caused acid reflux. So
he's getting excited about Splashtop.
Exactly. That must be it.
Yeah. And trust me, the funny guy in me is really holding back commenting on the device in this picture on the video here. But I'm doing it out of respect for the person that this relates to, and they know why. And that's all I'm going to say.
Is it an iPad? Is it a white iPad?
Yes, Thor.
Oh my goodness, Steve C made a video for Lifehacker. That's fantastic. Congratulations, Steve.
I didn't say it, Steve.
I wish he would have told us.
I didn't say it, Steve.
You know, they say every time Steve C touches a white iPad, an angel gets his wings.
Is that what happens? No, that's not. Is that why I'm hearing the flitter flap of wings? Okay, exactly. We're going to stop.
Okay.
All right. So yeah, man, I gotta throw Ubuntu on my Nexus 7. I gotta throw Chromium OS. Now I gotta try Splashtop. Man, I'm gonna be busy. But yeah. I'll do it for the audience, Dor. I'm doing it for the listeners. I'm doing it for you.
Yeah, time is of the essence. Trust me, I understand.
There we go.
So hard. This one might be a week late, but I don't care. I'm still gonna throw it out there. And when the time this gets published, a week and a half late. Okay. Linux Mint 14 came out. One of the things they always say, I believe, with Linux Mint is you can't upgrade. They basically say you can't upgrade. Don't upgrade. Back up and reinstall. That's why early, like Linux Mint 9 or something, they offered a backup tool, which I don't believe they offer anymore because it kind of didn't work or halfway worked. And they keep saying backup everything, reinstall, backup everything, reinstall. Well, our buddies over at How2Forge show you how to upgrade from Linux Mint 13 to Linux Mint 14 via apt, which is the normal way to upgrade. disclaimer, of course, comes with this. Back everything up first in case it goes sour. You can just reinstall and go from scratch. I honestly encourage somebody who has two computers, one of them running your whatever, your day-to-day, your stable, and then if you have a second computer running Linux Mint 13, I honestly encourage you to try this and let me and let the Linux Mint people know how it went. Because if it went good and it goes good for a good amount of people, like 70%+, I don't see why they wouldn't start to advertise this or make it part of the default Mint system.
Well, along that line, I hope it works. And if you had success with it, yes, please tell us. Please report back to the Mint project because they do great work. Okay. But I got to tell you, from my point of view, I haven't ever done an upgrade on Linux distro just because I don't want to get burned. Because lately, with so many distros that I install, I rarely really have, I mean, aside from my one desktop, I basically keep everything in the cloud or everything external, just so that if the thing caught fire, okay, whatever, no data loss, right? But even the time, even though now there's not that, I mean, the distros install pretty quickly, even on older systems, because they're so lightweight, depending on what you're installing, of course. But just the fact that if you're doing that upgrade, it's going to take a while, but if it botches, if anything little thing goes wrong, that's going to sour the experience for you, and chances are you're never going to try it again, no matter what review you read, no matter say, oh, it worked great for me. Well, you know what? That one time it didn't work great for me, I'm never doing it again. I'm always going to do a fresh install. That's how I view it. Same thing as if you had a piece of hardware or a couple pieces of hardware die on you from one manufacturer, chances are you're just not going to go back because that, you know, shame on me, you know, type of thing might come into play. But I hope it works. But every time I see that thing, especially when I run Ubuntu, pop up, oh, the latest distro is out. I mean, latest version is out. Do you want to upgrade? No, I don't. Close. So,
right. Yeah.
Have you ever upgraded any of your distros before, Dor?
Always, constantly, everyone. It's nothing like Windows, because back in the day, to upgrade a Windows version was to stick a staple gun to your foot and squeeze the trigger.
Right.
Okay. It's not close to that bad. Here's what none of them tell you. Okay. If you only installed things from the software center and you never did a PPA and you never did anything like that, you have an insanely high probability of it running perfect. The more stuff you installed from a PPA and the more stuff you installed from source, thus probably greatly increases your chance of something either hiccuping, still working, but hiccuping or not working. So that's the thing you got to stop and think about. If you are going to do this, have you installed a bunch of PPAs? You know, right. Have you did a lot of configure, make installs on your system? If you haven't done any PPAs and you haven't done any weird desktop tweaks or kind of thing like that, I'm willing to bet it will go smooth. I honestly am. I will say, with Ubuntu's, which Mint is based off, don't let anybody fool you.
Yep.
It does seem hit and miss from version to version. Like I remember 10.04 to 10.10, butter. But I believe it was 10.10 to 11.04, fair amount of people said they had issues, and it was mainly due to the loss of driver support for Wi-Fi or for video or something to that effect.
Yeah.
And I will say, by looking at the steps, they ain't doing nothing special. They are doing literally nothing special. These are the exact same steps you would go through if you had an old Debian install and the brand new version came out of Debian. These are essentially the exact same steps and commands you would do in Debian. Okay. So this really is not a Linux Mint thing. This is a Debian thing. The only thing that they say, that I guarantee it got a lot of people, during your first reboot, do not select last session or run X client script. You actually have to pick the sessions manager and pick like GNOME Classic or Cinnamon, or else you're going to get a black screen after login.
Yeah, see, that's just terrifies me, man.
Dude,
I mean, even though I know it's not the end of the world, it's still right. just
I'll say, if you never contemplated skydiving, if you never even wanted to go like wakeboarding off the back of a boat because it seemed like it might be a little bit too much dangerous, you don't want to do this. This is only for somebody who thinks, yeah, let's see what happens.
Right. And man, I just hope it breaks.
Right. Well, you have to have a little bit of a daring streak in you, I'll say.
There you go.
Okay. The next thing I just wanted to throw out there super quick. I have an MK-802. That was my rig at OLF to do my presentation.
Yep.
I don't believe it's out yet, but the MK-803 is the next one coming out, which supposedly has what spec-wise, it's ARM, so it's a little bit hard to say, but they're saying twice as powerful CPU, 4 gigabytes of flash storage, 1 gigabyte of RAM. I believe I only have 512 gigabytes of RAM,
okay, or
megabytes of RAM, and just a little bit of upgrades on the internal hardware. I think this is getting super, super close to being a real possible positive home theater type PC, and I'm mistaken, they are on sale right now for $79.
$79. Yeah, if you guys haven't seen what the MK-802 looks like, it's a slick, I mean, it's just like a little bit bigger than the thumb drive, a little bit for those of you who remember these, like the stick packs of gum. It's not that much bigger than that, right? But this case is just, first of all, the design of it is very cool. It looks very plain, but all the little nuances, right? If you look at this thing, it has the cool vent patterns on the bottom. It has the raised feet, which are so tiny, but if you're putting it on a surface, you don't obviously want to suffocate it, and they're just big enough to do that. It's all these little design tweaks that go into like an upgrade like this that I love to see from iteration to iteration, because they're obviously taking into consideration what may not have worked in the last one. And not only upgrading all the internal hardware, the things that are most important. I mean, obviously the case, whatever, you know, you could put it in a pack of gum and it would probably work. But all these little nuances, I really, really like that. And now, didn't the MK-802, didn't it also run ICS? Or am I mistaken?
It comes default with Android. You could put Linux on a micro SD card, and if it's inserted at boot time, it will boot to that instead. So you can boot to either one, I'm sure, with this one too. By default, that one came with 4.02 ice cream sandwich. Okay. I believe this one comes with 4.04.
Okay.
So it's technically a newer version. It's not Jelly Bean, but, you know, come on. It's ice cream sandwich. You're right there. But
yep.
Okay, here's the thing that I almost find fascinating, which a lot of Windows type techs, and I'm not insulting anyone out there, they just don't comprehend. It's the size of a thumb drive, but it has an HDMI port that can do 576i, 720p, 1080i, and 1080p output.
Mm-hmm.
That, I don't want to say it's a game changer, because I used to say that saying a lot. That can change people's viewpoints on microcomputing.
Yep.
You know, because you see it in the right circumstances, in the right environment, and I guarantee you, you're going to want to go home and buy one of these things.
I think it's Scotch, like it's in Scotch Tape, the company. They make these, what is it called? They're called fasteners, plastic fasteners. Basically, think of it as like a thick Velcro, but it's plastic, right? And it's adhesive on one side, and it comes, like you buy a pack of it, it's like $3, you get 6 of these strips. Well, I use those for mounting like hard drives under my desk, for mounting stuff at work. I mean, it's just, I mean, you put two of them on like a 1 or 2 pound, you know, object and place it on a flat surface, it's going to stay there. But think about having like a nice 23 inch monitor and then having this thing using the fastener just right on the back of the machine, or like in a corner to where you can reach it. And I mean, you got yourself a fully functional machine, and it's running on nothing, and it's $79. I mean, it's not going to be the latest and greatest. It's not going to be speed, but if it's going to suit your needs for your day to day, you could even have it. Okay. This is some awesome, not really awesome. You guys have probably thought of this, but I've been thinking about this. Like if I find a monitor at work, hypothetically, if I worked in an office, right, you could have this taped to the back of your LCD, right? And then just like plug it in when your boss isn't looking and go do whatever you want to do. Like, you know, I don't know, play some Android stuff or boot your Linux OS, you know, that'd be, and it's so tiny. Like awesome.
Yeah. They would never even know it's there.
Nope. Not at all.
Yeah.
You could probably actually bore a hole in like an old CRT and just put it inside. You really could, because it's that tiny.
Yeah. And if you're in an area where electricity is expensive or you don't have a lot of it, this is like gold. This is perfect. It fits, you know, peanut butter and chocolate, you know, just perfect.
But one of the things you mentioned initially was, is that, I mean, and same thing goes for televisions. You could just mount this to your television via like one of those fasteners and use, and probably throw XBMC on it, right?
Yeah. I think they're called command strips. Maybe? No?
Similar.
Okay.
These ones are more heavy duty, and it's like I can imagine, I mean, if you imagine Velcro, but the connecting pieces, instead of it being like that Velcro, it's hard plastic.
Oh, right. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, so it's much more heavy duty, which, I mean, I was looking for something like that when I was thinking about mounting hard drives to the bottom of my desk. Like, if they fall, it's going to be dead.
Right.
You know, you got moving discs and it falls 2 feet and hits the floor, it's dead. There's probably no saving it, period. With those, man, I mean, I can grab it and I can wiggle it, like, and it doesn't move, so I know it's not going to fall anywhere. But right. I'll find a link and I'll include it in the show notes.
Cool. Okay, last link I'll throw out there. Instructables, I gotta say, I like it a lot. It's because, to be honest, you can find nearly anything on Instructables. You can find some random crazy sneaker creation hack that makes feta cheese. I mean, you can find anything on Instructables. Okay. And what they did is they basically made the Raspberry Pi into a own cloud server, so it's like a Dropbox clone. I gotta say, I like this a lot. I like the idea of this a lot. And they literally go through, here's why I really liked it. The hardware side of it is almost inconsequential, because we all should know. Go to eBay, look up CookTech Inc., and you get yourself a solid A1, top of the line, top choice, premium case.
And I've said this before, and I've been watching a lot of Walking Dead. If you need to fight off zombies with a Raspberry Pi case, that's the one to do it with.
Yep. I guarantee you, Rick has a Raspberry Pi. We just haven't seen it yet.
That's right.
And I'm sure it's in that case. But here's what I really like about it. They, on step two, that's where they start getting their hands dirty. And they get into it, and they actually show you code and what things to run to get what is, I believe, the default Debian install of the Raspberry Pi, and then install all the PHP 5, Apache, all of the supporting libraries for own cloud, how to fix your networking. It literally shows you everything you need to do to turn it into an own cloud. This, to me, is more important than the physical structure of the case and the USB drive that's going to be the own cloud storage. That can be almost anything. This is what people need to know.
Definitely. And man, we're seeing all these cool projects of the Raspberry Pi pop up all the time, because when it first came out, I literally stopped and thought, okay, what are like the top five things I could do with it? Like, okay, there are my five things. And then all of a sudden, all these other cool things are coming out. It's like, I didn't even think of that, because I didn't know how powerful the device was. I didn't know you could utilize it in this way to do this thing. And you're seeing them pop up all the time, and I love it. It's still, dollar for dollar, I mean, it's one of the best machines out there, period. I mean, you can't find anything better for that price point, period. And with the external boards you can add to it, with all the different functions you can do, and something like this, I mean, it's just creating even more, it's making it a more desirable product. And I love to see the community hop in and really develop these kind of ideas for it. And I can't wait to get one finally, which I'll hopefully be getting one for Christmas. And, you know, I'm getting that CookTek Ink case because, man, just in case, you know, I'm shopping and, you know, like, Bruce Wayne style. My son is crying during the movie at the theater. My wife and I walk out to the alleyway. You know, the guy pulls out his gun, shoots me, hits the CookTek Ink case. I'm like, is that all you have? And he walks, runs away scared. Then my son doesn't grow up to be a crime fighter. Right. Yeah. My son just stays a normal little boy and we go on to be billionaires. That's fine with me. Only if I had a CookTek Ink case.
Right. That's good because I think Batman was also kind of disturbed and I don't want your son to be disturbed.
No.
Okay, and a super quick side thing I got to mention, because I mentioned OwnCloud, I completely forgot about this. I consider this guy to be, quite honestly, the best friend on the internet that I have not had a chance to meet. And yeah, honestly, Spork, you know, you're my brother, and there's other people, Bruce Patterson, dude, you know, hands down, I'd punch an old woman in the face for you. But this guy, we've had a lot of back and forth. His name is Ryan, and he is the owner of MadMonkeyHosting.com. He basically started this company up out of his house because he wants to change careers. He is essentially new into Linux. I say that even though he's now, I think, almost 2 years into Linux, and he's gotten pretty dang sharp. This is Ryan from Penguin Pro, Producer.com. And if you get hosting through him over at madmonkeyhosting.com, you have a one-click OwnCloud server install. And he was telling me all the other things that he had as a one-click install. He has more things than I have on every web host that I have, because I now have three web hosts. I'm not going to go into why, but I have three different companies hosting stuff I own. He has more one-click anything than all three of them.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and he is an utterly nice guy, cool guy, plays the heck out of a guitar, okay? He can make it bleed.
Is that Ryan Midnauer?
Exactly.
Right, there you go.
And he believes in customer service. So I just want to give him a mention because he's a hell of a good guy.
And he's throwing offers out there. He even contributed something special if the Kickstarter went through. So you know he's a good part of the community. And yeah, man, I mean, you know what? And Steve spoke to this for years. Customer service is the number one, most important thing. People will pay a little bit more. And I'm not saying his prices are high. I haven't looked at his prices. But the fact of the matter, people will pay a little bit more to just be treated well, to have someone they can call and help with problems. And from what you're telling me, he's also making it more convenient. So you have convenience and good customer service. I'm going to be looking at potentially doing some hosting. Martin is probably going to help me out with that. But I'll definitely check out Ryan as well. And I mean, I have all sorts of stuff in the works, so I probably do end up doing both, whatever. But yeah, definitely check them out. If madmonkeyhosting.com, is that what you were saying, Dor?
Yep. Yeah. And I'll say nobody beats GoDaddy prices. Okay. Don't expect to go there and see him beat GoDaddy prices. Nobody can, because GoDaddy's a bunch of stinking prostitutes. I'll say that. And there's no 5 pages of upsell after when you're in the purchase product like GoDaddy, and there's no doubt in my mind he gives as good or better response time, customer service, and satisfaction than a big company like GoDaddy. The reason to go with him is not because he's the cheapest one around, okay? Because good feature set, good customer service, good people. I don't have to say anything more. And he does WordPress, custom WordPress themes design. I can't do that, man.
Well, me either. Just like anything else in life, you get what you pay for. So always keep that in mind when you're looking at buying anything.
Indeed.
Very cool. I believe that was our last link, Dor. We'll go ahead and go into the emails. We have a few emails here, guys, and then a voicemail cap off the show. All right. First of all, Spork Saber, has just blown up my inbox. And I think it's the same with Dort. Spork, we love you. You're throwing us all sorts of good questions, and we appreciate them. We just can't fit them all on the show. And even you realize that. You're like, by the way, you probably shouldn't put this on the show. But, and then, okay. Anyway, appreciate it. Any content we get from you is always good. So there, I'm going to do a couple quick ones from Spork Saber. First of all, Spork Saber wrote in, hey guys, whenever I install a new desktop environment, the original desktop environment folders / tray icons are different. How can I keep the desktop environment separate? And Dor, I think you answered this for him just the other day. Is that correct?
Well, I didn't really get the complete gist of what he meant.
Okay.
Okay. I know if you use, for instance, Mate, or some people call it Mate, but there's no umlaut, so it's Mate. If you use Mate and GNOME 2, and you switch back and forth, the icon sets can be exactly the same. Okay. They don't have to be, but they can be. If you use Cinnamon and GNOME 3 or GNOME Shell, you can switch back and forth from desktop to desktop, and those desktop icons can be the exact same. But if you're going from KDE to GNOME, odds are they're not. Technically speaking, you could find icon sets and icon theme patterns that are the same across the both, but you would have to go discover them, find them, and install them both.
Because, yeah, what I basically got from it, too, and I think even in a follow-up email, he described it a little better, but basically, if you were running, you know, stock, you know, Linux distro with whatever icon set it had, and once he installed a new desktop environment and he went back to the original, the icon sets were changed in basically identical in both.
Right.
And I can't remember which distro he said he installed, but from my personal experience, the only time I've ever done that is recently. I had actually, whenever I wanted to try a different DE, I was just installed a new distro with it, with that desktop environment stock. So, excuse me, up until recently, I hadn't had experience of installing a different desktop environment in my current OS. I recently did that, though, with Ubuntu 11.10. I also installed XFCE. I'm just able to log into either one on boot, and I'd used XFCE before, but it was really foreign to me the first time I used it. I was like, because it looks so different. It's not, you know, it's not the rounded edges. It's not the flash, which is not what you really need for what I was doing, but still it's cool. But yeah, when I went back, and just logged in back into Unity, nothing changed. So perhaps, we should, get back to him and get some more details. But if any of you have had that issue before, if you're installing multiple desktop environments and you're having sort of remnants from one, leeching over to the other, whether it be fonts or icons or anything else, let us know, because it would be worthwhile for us to investigate that, especially since that's something I'm trying to advocate, is get out there and try everything. But if by trying several different things, you're breaking something that you need to use day to day, then we need to figure out a way to get around that. So,
right. And I'll say, never short us on details, like which DEs kind of help greatly.
Definitely.
And I got to ask you, what is your then opinion of XFCE? Because mine has changed as well.
Well, what, first of all, I love it. Mainly because, as you guys, as some of you may know, and some of you may not, originally I used Windows in the past, like I'm sure a lot of you, and then I got sick of that environment. So I actually moved to Mac back in 2005, just because I was an art student in multimedia, and at the time it would seem like a good choice. And aesthetically, OS X is very beautiful. Okay. And that's what draws a lot of people in, like kind of the flash, the zip wang, and like the, you know, the, just the beauty of it. It is a beautiful operating system. So at the end of the day, when I started transitioning to Linux, I saw all these things you could do visually in Linux, and that was something that kind of appealed to me. But at that point, I had been in the environment with all of the beautiful stuff, and I was just like, okay, well, I don't really care about that now. It was alluring at first, but I just want a system where I can get in and mess with it, and it's functional and it's speedy, which is exactly what XFCE is. Luckily, it's there as an option, because honestly, a lot of people have said this. Even I think Russ said this. It looks a lot like Windows 98, which is not far from the truth. Okay,
I never thought of that.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's kind of blocky Windows. I mean, imagine something that was made in the late 90s, like a desktop environment. Now, that's not to say it looks like garbage. There's really beautiful things about it, but it's lightweight. it's functional, and honestly, it's probably more than what a lot of people need. You know, I mean, if you have an older system, or even if you have a newer system, like I installed it on my brand new System 76 laptop because I hadn't played with it that much, and I wanted to start trying XFCE and LXDE distros and desktop environments in my current Ubuntu install, just because I want to have experience with something more lightweight, just to see how it changes my day-to-day on this system. And I also have older systems that I want to try to resurrect to use for other things, so I need to have experience with that, right, and see and potentially do the pros and cons with how well it ran on this system versus my like seven-year-old Vio laptop that's near death, right?
Right.
That has some XP install on it. So yeah, no. Overall, I liked it. I didn't have any problem with it whatsoever. It's just that initially, especially when I was able to toggle back and forth between Unity and that, I mean, you're just like, wow,
yeah,
this thing looks old, right? But at the end of the day, I mean, yeah, you don't need all the bells and whistles. You don't need all the shine, all the sparkle.
Right.
You just need something that works. And XFCE is that and more. So yeah. I really like it. What about you?
I will, because of me, compare XFCE, Unity, or a full-featured desktop, and the awesome desktop, which I used for a while, okay? And I'm going to compare it to my smoking cigarettes habit. And it goes like this. Unity, or KDE, or GNOME Shell, is like smoking full, real cigarettes, okay? Going cold turkey is like running OpenBox or Fluxbox or Awesome. What if you still want some of the experience of that full featured, but you don't want the whole full featured? XFCE to me is the perfect halfway point,
mm-hmm,
because it has enough looks as to where it's not unusable and you can find ways to get what you want done. Just the first time you go to do it, it's going to take an extra click or two to find it, mm-hmm, but it's so much faster than Unity, KDE, GNOME Shell, all of them. It's just so much faster. I will say, people say it's gotten so much heavier. It's like the old GNOME. That's what I want. I want GNOME too. Right. And XFCE is growing up. Some people say growing fat, like up to old GNOME too. I'm fine with that. I'm great. Here, have another piece of bacon. Have a turkey. Have a stick of butter while you're at it. Right. That's what I want. I used XFCE for the first time for like a solid week. It's been about a year and a half. I was so much more impressed with it now. You might say it looks like Windows 98. Well, the old one I used looked like Windows 3.1. Okay.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So this was definitely an upgrade in looks.
Yeah, and I really just wanted to try it, obviously, because I said I have the older hardware I'm going to utilize, but I kind of sat down and did inventory, okay, which desktop environments have I used, and it's not many, and, you know, with me co-hosting this show, just with me wanting to educate myself, I figured I have to do this for myself, and if I find it positive, I'll relay it to the listeners.
Right.
And yeah, I was, and it wasn't completely foreign at all. It looked different initially. It was kind of a shock. I was like, okay, but then, I mean, I can navigate it just like anything else. If you've used a PC in the last 20 years, you're going to be like, okay, well, this is where I go to do this. And it wasn't difficult. It was just a little bit, oh, okay, well, this is different. And then you just use it and it's fine.
Right. Their control panel. Once you find that, you're halfway home.
Right.
And I'll say, here's the other reason why I like XFCE and Awesome. I've been encouraging people now for the last month or 2 months, not directly, but to individuals, do not install the proprietary video drivers on almost any Linux system unless you have to. And what I mean by that is don't install them. Okay. XFCE is the perfect example. It doesn't need no friggin' 3D drivers. Okay.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Right. Don't install those drivers unless you go to do something that you then discover needs those 3D mm-hmm. proprietary drivers, then go install those drivers, because I've had too many people come to me with issues that started literally either after they installed those drivers or after those drivers got an update. And it's typically not sound related issues. I mean, video issues. A lot of times it's been sound issues.
That's weird. Yeah, I've had the one thing the proprietary drivers did for me, and I run ATI cards here at my place, but I had what was it? Oh, I had my resolution all out of whack via HDMI, but when I went VGA or DVI, it was fine. But I mean, we could go on about that forever. But yeah, XFCE has got my thumbs up for sure.
Exactly.
Definitely.
My clean and thumbs up.
There you go. Clean. Yes. Two clean thumbs. Mm-hmm. All right. And the second Spork Saber email that we were going to address this week, it says, "Hey, Maven and Undecided," as a reference to my Undecided nickname, which it still is, but more to come on that soon. Spork says, "I like using command line programs, but I can never remember which ones are installed. Or is there something I can do or an app I can use to see what command line applications are installed? Thanks, Spork Saber." Did I read that right?
I believe so. I thought so.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay.
Okay. I looked, I dug, I didn't ask Dan Washka, who's really the guy I should have asked in hindsight. But as from everything I can tell, an installed application is an installed application is an installed application. There's no special flags. There's no special folders. There's no special configuration files. There's nothing different in the physical layout of the application or anything about the application that that identifies it as a command line application. And the perfect example is, if you go into a command line with VLC installed and type VLC, it works in the command line. You get a GUI that's popped up, but you can run it in the command line. So I could not, to save my life, find any way to get a list of installed command line applications. The best answer I could give him was an absolute horrible answer, which was, if you look in, I want to say it was USR on your typical Ubuntu system. If you look in /bin, you'll see every executable command. So if you have, Google Chrome installed, you'll see in that directory, Google-Chrome. If you have Firefox installed, you'll see Firefox. If you have, curl installed, which is the command line app, you'll see curl in there. So it's really super difficult, from what I can tell, to identify one as being command line, one as being GUI.
Yeah, I've never investigated that, how to determine which is which, but Spork, if we find a way to do that, we'll definitely, and you know what? I mean, we'll definitely report back on it, but more importantly, I think it would be important for us to ask him, why do you want to know this? Because it sounds like a prelude question to something bigger. Did you get that feeling?
Good point. No, I didn't, but that's a really good point. I think you're
yeah,
right.
So we'll try to report back on this in the next couple weeks, if not next week soon, because it sounds like a smaller question leading up to something bigger, because obviously he has to have a reason to determine which is which. So we'll get back to you, Spork, and thanks for sending that out to us. Very cool. All right. This one's a little long, but it's okay. Well, we appreciate detail. Matt Skoda writes to me, and to me only. So this is for me, Dor. You might as well just throw your headphones down and go check your kids or something. It says, "To Cody, I've been listening to your podcasts for the past 2 months and find them very informative. In 2008, I had an old ThinkPad 600E laptop with Ubuntu 8.04 installed. This laptop had a Pentium 2 CPU with 256 megs of RAM. It's not the fastest system, but it did what I wanted. Surf the internet, read my email, and create documents with OpenOffice. My son gave me his old Dell Latitude D600 laptop. The CPU would run at 600 megahertz in XP. Both XP and Ubuntu 8.04 ran acceptable if I did not load up my hard drive with less than a gig of free of space. I upgraded the laptop to 2 gigs of RAM and 180 gig hard drive. I performed a fresh install of Windows XP with CDs that Dell originally provided with the laptop. This vastly increased the laptop performance. SpeedStep was now working in XP. I'm sticking with XP now because I have an iPod Touch. I need iTunes to manage my new iPad. Dude, I get you there. And trust me, there are some alternatives when it comes to just iPods, but the iPad, you pretty much need iTunes. We'll figure out some dual boot options for you. Okay, so Microsoft is not going to support XP in the future, so I thought I would jump onto Linux OS again. Good call. Linux Mint with 5-year LTS seemed to be the solution. I used the universal USB installer to install Linux Mint 13 on a USB 16 gig drive. I got the initial screen with the options. I chose to run it, and I got a blank screen with a blinking cursor. Then I installed Ubuntu 12.04 on the USB drive. When I first ran it, I got the same blank screen as with Linux Mint 13, except Ubuntu had a message that my CPU was not supported. If you read the hardware requirements on both sites, my laptop should have been supported. Someone is not updating their web pages, at least when I last viewed them. I found out that my CPU does not support PAE, physical address extension. No mention of this in distro requirements page. And he provides two links, which we'll provide in the show notes for you. Lightweight distributions also may not support non-PAE CPUs. Lubuntu 12.04 does support non-PAE CPUs, while Lubuntu 12.10 does not. Bodhi Linux supports both. Oh, I love Bodhi. So, excuse me. After trying a number of distros, Puppy, Lubuntu 12.04, and 12.10, Zubuntu 12.04, Ubuntu 12.04 Desktop, IE386, non-PAE, Linux Mint 12 and 13, etc., I took Dor's advice and tried Ubuntu 10.04. Why? Because it uses a native kernel, 2.6.32-38 generic. Ubuntu 10.04 is a speed demon on my laptop, much faster than the 2012 distros. Matt Skoda, member of the ACGNJ, I live in New Jersey. And then PS to Cody, go Beavers. May they win this year's Civil War. We are a Beaver family. Well, sorry, Matt. The Beavers didn't have a chance. They haven't had a chance for the past 4 years. And I love saying that stuff to get people riled up because I'm not a sports fan. Unfortunately, this email, we read a little bit late because the Civil War has already passed. But I will say that my mother-in-law is actually an OSU alum, and I call her every year in the fourth quarter of the Civil War game versus U of O and OSU just to get a score update. But like, do you guys know what's going on? Because they just blown them out of the water every year, and she just is like, you need to shut up and get off the phone, just hangs up on me every year. Fourth quarter, I call her up and just like, yeah, so what's going on? I'm at work. Matt, I'm happy for you that you're a Beaver fan. Congratulations on your bowl game. You guys are going to a bowl game, but you didn't beat the Ducks. And I grew up in Eugene, so I have to be a Duck fan, but I don't watch sports. But I just love taking that stance just to make the Beaver fans upset.
Okay, good man.
I'll say that.
And it's a really quick comment. Jeff Owens had this same issue, and God bless Matt. I don't know how long it took for him to figure this out. It took me and Jeff, and to be honest, it took Jeff, because I tried weeks and weeks of pounding and looking to figure out, for some reason, his processor does not support PAE. PAE has extra extensions in the kernel to allow a 32-bit kernel to see more than 4 gigabytes of RAM.
Okay, all right. Yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah.
So that's really all PAE is. But certain processors, if you try to load a PAE kernel, you get black screen, nothing else.
Isn't that so obscure? Like, how would you know that unless you're really having problems with it and you're just digging and digging and digging? I mean, it sounds like it took the three of you quite a while to even find that out.
Yeah. So now I'll say, if you have three Linux distros, two of them boot to a black screen, one doesn't, I'll see if I can find the command you can run in a terminal that will tell you if you have a PAE
a distro that supports PAE CPUs.
Well, if your CPU supports PAE kernels, and if it doesn't, then you have to find distributions that allow for 32-bit non-PAE kernels.
There you go.
That was a mouthful.
Now, coincidentally, 10.04 is an LTS, so it may be. Now, I found it interesting that even Ubuntu 12.04 did, but 12.10 did not. So maybe they're purposely putting that in the long-term support editions and not in the current ones, or not maybe the bleeding edge. That's possible. It'd definitely be something. And if you guys are having problems installing any sort of distros on older laptops, maybe try this. And like I said, Dor's going to try to find that command line tool to find out and see if the distro does or does not support it. But maybe try a PAE-compatible distro. A distro with a PAE-compatible kernel. And you might see some luck there. Because we all have that thing, that old box, that old laptop that we're trying to get some more use out of. And if you hit a couple hurdles like this, it could be almost kind of like, well, maybe I just won't try it. But keep at it. You'll get it running.
Right.
And as a quick side note, I live right near OSU. Oregon State University. Go Beavers. I love the Beavers too. Orange and black are a couple of my favorite colors. If you guys listen to this, I don't hate you at all. I just love getting people riled up. That's all. Okay, so Jack sent a message. Steve and Cody, thank you for the wonderful podcast, Linux to the Rest of Us, that I enjoy listening to each week. I look forward to learning new commands and being exposed to new technology that is always included in your podcasts. Is it possible to lower the bitrate of the podcast to a reasonable rate, 30 to 40 kilobytes per second, that would allow folks with low bandwidth internet connections to download and listen to them more comfortably? How about OGG files? Would you think about doing a podcast on Linux security of firewalls running as root, as in puppy, and why or why not? Anyway, thanks for reading these words with consideration. Regards, Jack.
Well, for the lower bitrate, to be honest, it's hard to play with bitrate because it will break in so many other MP3 players or other players.
Mm-hmm.
If you really want a different bitrate or OGG, I highly suggest you download something like PodGit or BashPodder, run it as a cron task to update your podcatcher to download the file, and then run a separate command to convert it, the bitrate, or to convert the file, because it will break far too often. And I honestly believe if we offer a lower bitrate or an OGG file, the percentage of people that would subscribe to that would be insanely low. So right now it's just a question of, is it worth our time? And we're not really sure of that.
Personally, and I'm sure Dora feels the same with you, I would love to offer it in OGG, but as of right now, we have to kind of weigh the options. Is it feasible for us? Now, there's only one way you can find that out, is to throw it out there, let it go for a few months and see who latches onto it. But in the meantime, his alternative for getting it to you and being able to convert it into a lower bitrate is a great solution. So I would definitely suggest it. Hit him up personally for that, because I don't know how to do it. I would love to know how to do it, but I don't. And I adore, if you could let me know how to do that as well, that would be very cool. Because we do have to, I mean, I've been listening to the show since day one, even all other Podnuts shows. We do have international listeners. We do have listeners in areas that don't have the greatest bandwidth. And we have to take responsibility to get the content to them as best as we can, whether it be for providing it in a lower bitrate, which may not be feasible this time, or at least finding solutions for them to do it themselves, which is right. Ultimately what you need to do as a listener and as a user is take responsibility for your limitations and do what you can to make it work for you.
Right.
Very cool. All right. Well, that's it for the emails this week. We do have one voicemail from Jeff Spencer, and when Dor is ready, he will go ahead and get that queued up and play it.
Cool. Cool.
Hey, Cody, this is Jeff Spencer down in Grants Pass, and I'm catching up on some of the older Linux for the Rest of Us podcasts. You were asking about technology for babies. I've got a child very similar in age to yours. My little girl is 19 months old right now, and she also very much loves our phones and loves the computers. There she is right now. And one thing I have found to be just the perfect solution for that is an OtterBox Defender case for the Galaxy Tab, the original Galaxy Tab that we have. Pretty much it's her tablet now, but it has a solid rubberish surround to keep water out. It's got a front and back hard plastic case, as well as an additional piece of acrylic over the screen. So it's very, very child friendly. Don't worry too much about giving her the thing to walk around with and play and pop the bubbles or color or whatever else that she finds interesting on there, because when she drops it, no big deal. Thanks, guys. Talk with you soon.
Well, thank you, Jeff, for sending that voicemail. I got to say, first of all, thank you for still addressing the children with technology issue, because it's been over a month since I addressed that on the show, but even in those 30 days or more, my son's overall knowledge base as far as interfacing with like my Android tablet and my phone has just skyrocketed. Like, I literally watched him today. He grabbed my phone, my HTC Evo 4G LTE, which is a mouthful. He grabbed it. He knows how to turn it. He's only 16 months old, right? He knows how to like hit the button to turn the display on. He knows how to grab the little ring with his finger in Sense 4.0 and lift it up to launch the screen and flick through the tabs. I mean, it's just insane on what he can do now as opposed to what he could do back then. So thank you for writing in about that. And then, the OtterBox. If you guys have a device that OtterBox makes a case for, buy it. I mean, I'm giving them my full endorsement. I'm not paid to say that. I've talked about this on Android App Addicts. They make the best cases, period. I haven't owned any of the cases for the tablets, so it's nice to hear a testimonial from an owner for one of their cases for the tablets. Basically, just of it, they have three models. There's Impact, Commuter, and Defender. Impact is just the gel case, which is fine for scratches. It's not going to help you against shock absorption, right? And then the one he talked about is at the other end of the spectrum, the Defender, where it has hard plastic that goes over the device and almost like foam that goes around that. So almost think of it as like a Nerf football, like around your device. That adds quite a bit of bulk to it, and that's not the one I like. Then again, I'm not out and about where I might drop my device and have it roll down a hill, so that's not useful for me. The one in the middle, just like Goldilocks and the Three Bears, the one in the middle is just right for me, okay? The commuter has the gel, okay, and then hard plastic over it, to where if you drop it, it's going to absorb the shock with the gel, and then it still protects that device, and there's a lip that goes over the screen, to where even if you drop it on the screen's never going to touch the surface as long as it's a flat surface. So yeah, if you have kids, you're handing them these devices, get an OtterBox case. They make them for almost every single Android device. Obviously any of the Apple devices, they have it, and if you're listening to this show, and if you have one of those, that's fine. Just buy an Android thing soon, please. Okay.
Yeah, I'll say the more popular your device is, the more likely they have a case. You came on Android App Addicts and you spoke very highly of them.
Dude, and, yeah.
Tracy got me an X2, a Droid X2, and he gave me an OtterBox case with it. Dude, there's no doubt in my mind I could drop this thing from 15 feet and nothing would be wrong with the phone.
Yep. Yeah. They're just amazing products. So thank you very much, Jeff, for writing in about that. Real quick before we sign off, one of the very last pieces of correspondence about kids on technology or kids on Linux I got was from our good friend, a Knucklehead Tech, who told me a good story about one of his sons recently used Windows for the first time and was upset that he couldn't drop to a command line and get root access and install apps through the command line.
Dude.
So he said that it will happen. Your kids are going to get to that point where they're using a different OS and it's just so foreign to them. And he was literally asking Josh, he was like, "Dad, why can't I do this? Why isn't this working?" He's like, it's Windows, son. You just can't do it. He's like, "Well, I'm not going to use it then." And then just like stopped using it.
Wow.
So I read a great, this is going to be quick. I read a great study years ago about kids in education, where basically our educational system right now is, you hear about in like the whole No Child Left Behind thing. Well, basically, the way, and you guys know this, well, the way we educate our children now is we get them up to a certain level at the end of a grade, right? And then they go on to the next grade and the next grade, where they did this study in Japan. It was based on education in Japan, but basically they took kids that were at a certain competency level and then they just started educating them based on their competency level. So if a 5-year-old was at a junior high intellect and understood things, they just started teaching him that. They didn't bother with the rest of the stuff because they figured, well, the kid already knows it. They tested him up to a certain level and they just did that. I'm trying to give my son more advanced tech because my wife is like, "Oh, let's get him one of these kid tablets." And I'm like, "No, why? I can't, I'm not going to be, the thing's going to be useless in a year or two because they're not going to support it." I mean, I'm giving my 16 month old son, my Nexus 7, just like, "Here you go." And I'm just watching him play with it. And it's amazing. So if you do have kids, one thing I've learned so far out of this whole experience, and I appreciate you guys writing in, is give your kids the benefit of the doubt. Give them the best tech that you can to play with, because it's just going to accelerate their learning that much faster, which is exactly what I was kind of the thing I was trying to find out was that. And that's what I learned. And it was through you guys and your experiences sharing with me. So I thank you very much for that. Dor, have you experienced similar things with your son, with your kids?
My kid's not really old enough to really get what's going on behind the computer. He just knows if I have Tux paint and, you know, stuff like that, I'm fine. If I don't have that, this computer thing is useless to me.
Well, you know what? Just like with anything else, you got to have that one thing that sort of interests you in it first, and then you get good at that and you branch off from there.
Yeah, and he is definitely laser focused, where if something does not interest him, nope, it ain't going to get any of his time.
Well, at least you've assessed that need, you understand him, and you're going to be able to communicate with him better in the future based on that, so that's good.
Yes, but I will say trying to wrangle him and turn him to focus him during something is like one human being trying to turn a ocean liner.
Right.
It's not easy. Not easy at all.
All that means he's going to be really good at something.
That just means I'm going to basically have to stay out of his way and just try to be nice to him, and you know.
So if I were to buy you something on podnuts.com/Amazon, it might be Riot Gear.
Riot Gear?
To help, Riot Gear to help you wrangle him? Well, to help you wrangle him and not get injured in the process.
Yeah, and I'll say Sticks of Bacon will be good, because he's definitely influenced by bacon.
There you go.
I called him. I told Kevin on Twitter this. I think now my youngest, my oldest son purposely try to steal bacon off my plate when we're at a restaurant and I got bacon. I like turn and I catch them with their hands slowly going to my bacon. I think they just want to see the reaction on my face. It's like, dude, don't touch the bacon. Leave the bacon alone. Yeah, but they don't get it.
My mother always used to tell me this story. They used to take me to this one diner every Sunday. And the minute that I walked in the diner, and I was a little boy, but I would smell sausage, and all I would do until they brought me a little plate of sausages was just scream the word sausages over and over and over again. to the point where we would walk in and the waitress would know that we were there. They should have a little plate of sausages ready to follow us to our table and put them down in front of me.
That's a good waitress.
It is. So yeah, if you guys do need Riot Gear this holiday or anything else, and you're planning on buying it online rather than going waiting in line in the huge masses of people trying to buy everything else that they want, please go to podnuts.com/Amazon. It takes you right to Amazon. It's not going to look any different. If you've shopped on Amazon before, it's exact same interface, but by going through that link, you're helping the Podnuts network, because we get a small commission from every sale done that way. And you might think, well, is my purchase really going to add anything? Well, yes, because all those little things add up to funds that will help the network as a whole. So please go check that out, podnuts.com/Amazon. If you know how to make a special link in your browser, for instance, I have mine on Google Chrome. I just have, it's a little Amazon icon. I click on it, goes right to podnuts.com/Amazon, kicks me to Amazon, do my shopping, and Podnuts get some money. So check it out.
Very cool.
Couple last things. As always, as the last few weeks we mentioned, the Ohio Linux Fest 2013 is still looking for a volunteer coordinator. We got a couple people that are interested in sharing the responsibility. One of them is myself, and another gentleman. If you are planning going to OLF 2013, and if you want to help at all, either be a volunteer yourself or help be maybe a co-coordinator of the volunteers. Now that involves helping basically getting the volunteers ready to understand where they need to go and what they need to do before the fest and during the fest. If you're interested in either one of those responsibilities in any capacity whatsoever, please contact Kevin O'Brien at news@ohiolinux.org. Because he's looking for that. The sooner we get those people in place, that's just one more thing he can check off his list, of which I'm sure is immense leading into OLF 2013. So please do that. And if you guys want to send us any emails to the show, please send it to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. For instance, I asked earlier, what do you guys think about the new Chromebooks? If you have used them, if you installed Linux on them, or just your general opinions, please send them to us, or you can hit me up on Google+ or Door. Because we want your opinions, because this is kind of a game changer as far as a really, really cheap device that we as this community can get in and hack on and have all sorts of other things crack open and discover. So I'm very, very interested in getting that. Voicemails, please dial 7076-PODNUT. We love playing voicemails as well as reading emails. And where can we find you, Door? What's going on?
If you want to know more about me, just go to doortodoorgeek.com. The real place to be is on Google+. If you go to doortodoorgeek.com, there is a link on the lower right-hand side right to my Google+ feed. To be honest, that's a really good way to get in in contact with me, but I will always encourage people, podcast at Lennox for the rest of us is the best to get a hold of the show.
Definitely. And yeah, don't hesitate to me to hit me up on Google Plus. I'm checking it, you know, at least once an hour. So I've had a lot of you guys reach out to me and we've had some really good conversations. I would love to open that up even wider. Feel free to ask me or Adore anything, but anything directed toward the show. Yes, please send it to podcast@linuxtherestofus.com. And that is how you will have your email read on the show. And if you want to hit me up on Google Plus, I'm just Cody Cooper on Google Plus. And thank you very much for listening. And we hope to see you soon. And do not forget, Linux is not just for the rest of us. It's for all of us.